everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable number 222. Today we're going to be talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 6, Episode 10, Wrecked, and Angel, Season 3, Episode 10, Dad. As usual, if you'd like to get into contact with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, find us on Twitter at re_watchable, comment on this post on hypable.com, or find us at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. My name is Karen. I am a super fan, and I'm joined by fellow super fan Mai, as well as newbies Danielle and Kristen. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
So we're going to kick this off, as usual, with fun facts. And my fun fact this week is that I'm heading off to San Diego Comic-Con. I am leaving tomorrow of this recording, which is, we're recording on Sunday, so I'll be leaving on Monday. I've yet to pack. Nobody is surprised. Like, literally, no one is surprised. But it will get done. It will get done. I have to do laundry first. Gotta fit that in at some point. But I am excited, and I'll be seeing Natalie and Ariana. I think that's the only two from...
I think so, yeah.
This podcast.
Yeah.
Which is going to be really cool. And we might do some Buffy things. I'm actually super into doing Buffy things this year. Usually, like, I haven't gone to the sing-along or anything before, but it's, like, really relevant right now. So maybe I'll drag them with me. That would be a lot of fun. But Danielle, do you have a fun fact to share with us this week?
Sure. I do. And it's tangentially Buffy related. So that's always a plus. I am currently apartment hunting, which is terrible, and it's taking a really long time, and it's very stressful, so maybe not so fun until, like, I actually have a place to call my own and put up my fun stuff, but it is tangentially Buffy-related because I am looking in an area called Evanston, which is where Northwestern University is located, and that is one of the universities that Buffy somehow got accepted into when she applied for college. And I don't know if I was on that episode, but when I saw that she was accepted to Northwestern, I started laughing hysterically because I mean, she's a smart girl, but there's no way she would have gotten into Northwestern University. So that is my fun fact.
That is pretty interesting. Kristen, what about you?
Nothing is fun. I can come up with nothing.
I got real morbid real fast. Nothing is fun.
Nothing is fun. I mean,
you can throw a party while I'm gone.
How's your car doing?
It's fine. It's dry now. I don't remember where I told this story.
The weather.
Was it okay? It was not about the weather. That's why I thought. Okay, for those who aren't listeners of Not About the Weather, you should go check that out. But if you haven't yet, long story short, when I got back from our trip to Indie PopCon with Danielle and Karen and Danya, I found an inch of water in my back seat that I kind of knew was there because we kind of started to have a problem in Indy. It's from my air conditioner. We're pretty sure that the, like, drainage pipe is clogged, the one that lets it drain out of the car like normal. So instead it's draining into my car, which is awesome. And when I got home, my dad had to take a cup and bail the inch of water, 2 inches of water out of my back seat. And then we went and got, like, a wet vac and, like, got the rest of it out. But it was a hot mess. And, yeah, so that's always adventuresome, I guess. But now I have to go get it looked at this week, hopefully. I just have to get Karen to the airport before I can start worrying about where my car is going. That's going to be a crappy drive with no air conditioning.
Oh, no.
I just realized.
Yeah.
Well, we'll
make
it
work. We'll make it work.
We'll figure it out.
I love, like, live reactions, live realizations on podcasts. So genuine.
No shortage of them today.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we will make it work, though. What about you, Mai? You got a fun fact for us?
The most fun I've had is editing podcasts and learning how to do that.
That is so nice because nobody likes doing it, myself included. I mean, I don't mind it. I just usually don't have time, but it is kind of cathartic because I like tedious things. It feels very like I've accomplished a lot when when I get it done, but I really appreciate how much you've enjoyed learning how to do that.
I mean, if I'm not on it, it basically means I'm getting the episode early, so
yeah.
You know how much I love podcasts.
Exactly. Yes.
Perk.
It's a perk, yeah.
It is.
That's awesome. Well, we definitely appreciate it. She has saved my skin more than once, and will continue to do so while I'm away at San Diego. So, round of
with
applause.
With a smile.
Yes. Aw, thank you. All right, we're going to jump into Buffy the Vampire Slayer, episode 610, Wrecked. In this episode, Buffy wakes up to find that she hates how much she loved Spike's bring the house down sex last night. Unfortunately, Willow is also not sleeping, mostly because she's spending all day and night drugged out on magic with not a rat, Amy. Yeah, this is an interesting episode where there's quite a few turn of events, and we'll have to see how they play out. But we start off with Dawn basically getting left alone all night because both Willow and Buffy never showed up. But thank goodness that Tara is there. She's being responsible. She's keeping an eye out for her. And they have a fun night together and wake up very confused that nobody else came home and a little bit worried too. But how about you guys loving Tara right now, being the responsible one?
I like her. I've done like a slight 180 on her character that I am thankful for. And it's been this season, I think, that's helped me like her more. She's just a very responsible person that I can see a lot of myself in. And I enjoy her dynamics with different characters other than Willow. Like when she comes out from under Willow's shadow, like she's great.
Yeah, I think I'm going to like Willowless Tara even more. Like I like her. I've always thought she was, you know, just a solid, dependable character. But seeing her now, like even though she's not with Willow and, you know, Dawn kind of has to be at the house, like she's still not afraid to be there for Dawn, even if it means possible awkward, you know, meetings with Willow. So I just, yeah, you gotta love Tara. She's taking care of people and it's lovely.
And, you know, we kind of go over to see where the two other girls are, and we first land on Buffy, who wakes up from sleeping with Spike, and they brought the house down, and that's kind of a funny moment, but also she's not doing too great. And apparently the first words Buffy says upon waking up next to Spike is practically identical to the words he says after his first dream, when he kind of realizes he might feel something for her. And she says, like, you know, oh God, no. And he kind of says the same thing earlier on, which is interesting. But I want to know in particular how you guys feel about the way she treats him when they wake up. I mean, she's pretty disgusted with herself and she lets him know it. Do you feel bad for Spike in this moment?
Yeah, that was kind of a dick move of hers. Like, I understand that she has regrets, but she was projecting her regrets onto him a lot more than maybe I think he deserved, especially since she initiated things. I don't know. You can have regrets and be kind of like disgusted, and like maybe she could have tried to get out of there without just being kind of gross about it. I don't know.
I mean, he seems to have a pretty decent grasp on the, like, thou dost protest too much kind of thing. Like, she keeps telling him how terrible it was and how, you know, how embarrassed she is and how awful being with him is, that I think he kind of gets that she doesn't regret it. And that's what she's freaking out about, is that it's not, she's freaked out about the fact that she keeps making out with / sleeping with Spike and just can't seem to get her head around it. And he's not as fazed by the fact that she's using like this quote unquote disgust and whatever about the situation. Like, she's using that to keep herself at arm's length. And eventually I think he knows that they'll get to the bottom of whatever it is that's bugging her.
Spike says some pretty horrible things himself though.
Yeah, that's actually something I wanted to ask you in particular, Mai, because I know as super fans, a lot of us are rewatching this with kind of a new pair of eyes. Maybe not everybody, but I know Natalie in particular has talked about this, where she's like, I really love Buffy and Spike. I really love Spike. But now that I'm watching it after a little bit more time, am I going to feel the same way? And I got a little uncomfortable with the way that he was sort of manhandling her. And I think that there's a very thin line between when somebody says no and, like, I don't know, it's not going to
make me.
Yeah, you know, like, it's a little bit towing the line, which Spike obviously loves to do. And clearly Buffy does enjoy being with him, even when she says no. Does that give him the right to push that? Not necessarily, especially because they're in kind of a contentious relationship. But I wanted to know if you felt uncomfortable at all with the way that he was kind of pulling her down to him and the things that he was doing in reaction to the way that she was talking about what had happened.
Honestly, I'm not sure how to feel about it. I feel like Spike was nicer before Buffy seemed to like him back, if that makes sense, that he treated her better. And after she seemed to feel something back, he almost is self-sabotaging. And that he's emotionally inept at handling what's happening between them. I think we know that.
Yeah.
And so his demon side is coming out more. I feel like that's pretty obvious. And also with the chip factoring in, it's a weird situation.
It is. It's
because
not
if it was Riley doing it, a pure human dude or angel even who has a soul, then I think I would feel a lot different. And that also makes me feel like really weird about the situation.
Right. We can't ever forget that he doesn't have a soul, but also how much behavior can we excuse because of that?
Yeah, it's a fine line to toe.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he's made strides because he is pretty much the only vampire who acts, you know, quote unquote decently. Even if he's been Pavlovian into it.
Danielle, I know you said you felt bad for Spike. How are you feeling about the flip side of it too? Does any of this make you uncomfortable, or do you kind of see where he's coming from?
I mean, it made me uncomfortable. I think Spike is never one to let anyone else get the last word. And so not only that, but he always tries to top whatever he's trying to do. So at some point, I think like his responses were, like, she evoked his responses, like she was like kind of poking him, but like his responses did make me uncomfortable. And so it's sort of like, I hate putting everything on Buffy, but it sort of started with her making the situation maybe a little bit worse than it should have, and then he escalated it. And because he escalated it, like, his grossness escalated it, and then Buffy escalated, like, it just kept going that way. So it got really uncomfortable really quickly, to where by the end I did feel bad for Buffy, but I couldn't forget where it started. I sound like a terrible person, but that's kind of how I see it.
No, I agree.
They're both at fault here. They both could have acted better and been more sure of their decisions, particularly Buffy. And I think when they first woke up, Spike was like, hey, you know, like, what's going on? And like, do you really have to leave? Like, he was being pretty cute. And she was just like, yeah, no, I'm out of here. And Spike gets really defensive, especially because you have to remember, too, he's very good at reading people. I mean, remember before when he knew everything going on with the Scoobies and what their weaknesses were and everything? Like, he's very good at reading people. He knows how Buffy feels. And the fact that she won't admit it is just driving him crazy, because like he says in this episode too, like, I love you and I know that you feel something even if you don't necessarily admit it, but he's the one that's kind of out there right now because he's already admitted how he feels. So he gets mad, and again, demon, so like his reactions aren't always going to be good or well thought out, and he does like to poke back, that's for sure. So, like I said, contentious.
Yeah, they're both definitely hitting each other where it's supposed to hurt.
Exactly.
When Buffy says, you're just convenient, you know, you can see that reaction on Spike's face.
And he knows how much she feels about the fact that she's a Slayer and now has slept with two vampires. So he's hitting below the belt too, and yeah, it gets pretty nasty pretty fast. But this is definitely something I want to keep an eye on as we go through the episodes, because Spike's character is so interesting. We've talked about it before, but there's going to be some high points and low points, like with everything, and as it progresses, I'm definitely interested in seeing how the super fans kind of maybe change their perspective of the situation, and then the newbies, how they're interpreting it for the first time.
I feel like this really makes Buffy really interesting too, compared to how I felt about her on, you know, when I was younger and saw this for the first time.
Right. Yeah.
Because it's not just a rewatch, you know, I'm a lot older than the first time.
Right. And I mean, things have changed. We talk about this all the time too, from the late 90s, early 2000s. Like, people talk about PC culture being a bad thing, but, you know, I think all of us can agree, like, it's not always a bad thing. And kind of having that perspective on this now is really interesting. And I think that's why I understand a lot more than I did when I first watched this, or even when I watched it afterwards versus now. So again, newbies watching this for the first time in 2017, very interesting sort of reaction. So I'm very interested in kind of cataloging that and see how everybody feels. I want to switch over to Willow now, because Willow has a huge part in this episode. And like I said before, this is kind of a huge turning point for her. And we see Amy is still enabling Willow and her magic addiction. They come back and, you know, they were out all night, and Willow does feel bad about leaving Dawn, and she apologizes again and again. She's very tired. Her powers kind of went away because she used too much of them. So Amy's like, hey, I know a guy. And they go to this guy named Rack, who's super creepy, and she basically gets high off of magic. And she doesn't just go once, she goes twice. And the second time, she actually takes Dawn with her. And I will say, this is really hard to watch because it is very real. But I love the parallel of magic being like a drug, and that Willow has become addicted to it. So Kristen, I know, is a big Willow fan. How did you feel kind of seeing this interpretation of it? Are you mad at Willow? Do you feel bad for her? Is it a little bit of both?
I mean, she's been spiraling. And in the wake of, you know, seeing Tara that day, and just all, you know, her consequences are real, and she knows that there are real consequences to the things she's doing, but at the same time, she feels terrible. Like, everything in her life is just, nothing's working and nothing feels right. So when she feels the high of being out with Amy the night before, it doesn't surprise me that she'll chase it. Like, it didn't shock me at all that when Amy said, I've got this, you know, this friend and he can help us out. Like, you're right. The parallel is actually really interesting because it fits, like, it works so well. And she basically has been a drug addict, dabbling with it for so long and staying on the I don't have a problem side of things. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's overwhelmed her. She's at a point where she can't go back, you know, she can't necessarily step back over the line all on her own, and she can't even find the line at this point. So, yeah, I mean, she's Willow. She's making some absolutely horrific choices, especially when it comes to taking Dawn there. But she it has to get to this point. She's going to make it, you know, I knew that some really terrible choices were coming. I could tell that, you know, the magical consequences for the stuff she's doing are going to catch up with her, and we're starting to get there.
And I mean, it's not even just that she takes Dawn with her. They crash the car. Willow summons that demon. Like, it's so much more. Danielle, how do you feel about Dawn getting dragged into this and the fact that Willow was really just outside of her mind, wasn't thinking of anything and acting like she was drunk, basically, and just feeling no consequences in that moment?
I mean, that moment was awful. I was probably more uncomfortable there than the scenes that we were just talking about with Buffy and Spike. But I think actually worse than after she walked out of that magic den, is that the same thing as like a drug den, called a magic den, was the fact that Willow invited Dawn out at all. Because when she first invited Dawn out, immediately it didn't really feel to me like something she actually wanted to do with Dawn. It felt like something she maybe felt sorry for Dawn, that she was left by herself. And I could kind of see the wheels turning in Willow's head. Like, I can go out with Dawn and it'll be okay. And I can just like stop by real quick. And for some reason, it was okay for her to go to the magic den with someone else rather than by herself. Like, I think it was worse. I think it was worse that Willow even asked Dawn out in the first place, because her motives weren't pure at that point. And that's the saddest part. I think it's also bad when she was under the influence, but when she's not under the influence and she was making that decision, that to me is worse.
And I mean, not to defend her by any means, but going through withdrawals is awful. I mean, we see that several times in this episode, not only with Willow, but also with Amy. And you just, I luckily enough don't have experience with that myself, but like, I can imagine how horrible it must feel. Not only do you physically feel ill, but your brain wants that again. You know, she wants that magic so badly that, again, she's just not thinking straight. But regardless, you're right, she's not under the influence in that moment, and she still decides to risk it. And Willow, I mean, obviously we see later, Willow loves Dawn. She cares about her greatly. And it's one of those things where, Kristen, you actually did call this, because I remember hearing you say before, you know, she has to hit rock bottom, and she hasn't hit rock bottom yet. And I'm not going to say whether or not this is rock bottom, but she's hit a really low point right now, and it is not great. And we see that she did need to do this before she could admit what was wrong with her. And I'll talk about that in a little bit, because that's actually my favorite scene, as awful as it is. But you know, everyone's pretty mad. Spike was helping Buffy look for Dawn, and he ends up taking care of Dawn, getting her to the hospital and everything. So he's sort of on the sidelines, but very much on Buffy's side. Buffy is pissed. Dawn slaps Willow. And I think, like, seeing how much she emotionally hurt Dawn, not even just physically, but emotionally hurt Dawn, really kills Willow in that moment. And I wanted to read this out because this is very important. I'm pretty sure Adriana wrote this doc. And she says, "We finally realize Willow's an addict. This is a really great arc. The woman is horrible and I still mostly hate her, but I also actually understand her now too. And Allison Hannigan killed it with her acting chops. And let me tell you, this part just always gets me. It's the whole situation, and it's how absolutely desperate and pathetic Willow is in this moment when she admits what's going on with her, that I love watching it, even though it just rips my heart out of my chest." And then later, Buffy and Willow do end up having a heart-to-heart after Dawn is taken care of. And this is really interesting, because Willow doesn't think she's anything special without her magic. She thinks she's just a pathetic girl. She even goes back to saying, like, Tara never would have noticed her if she hadn't had any powers. And I wonder, you know, do you guys feel that way? Do you think that she is a much better person and character because she has her magic? Or do you still feel like that original Willow makes her special as well?
I like hacker Willow.
Me too. I second that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that she became more interesting when she started getting into magic. Like, I'm being blatantly honest. Like, I liked Hacker Willow in the first couple seasons, but at some point, she kind of reached the point where she didn't feel like she was contributing to the team. And learning about magic and figuring out that that's a way that she could help informed a lot of her character. It changed her. And I don't think magic itself is the problem. It's the fact that she hasn't had boundaries. She doesn't know where to stop. Like, I don't necessarily think that magic itself is the drug. It's like the fact that she has had a never-ending supply and doesn't have anyone telling her, you know, it's like a prescription drug. It's like, it can be helpful and it can help, you know, in certain situations and it can be, you know, a good thing, but too much of anything can be bad. And at this point, she just hasn't had a way, or she hasn't had anyone tell her, the right people telling her. Like, I know Tara's told her, but you know what I mean? Like, it didn't start off as a bad thing. Having magic has helped them and saved them all in a lot of places, as well as caused some problems too. But like, Willow gained a lot of points and kind of became a fully, you know, fledged character when she realized that she had something else to contribute.
It definitely complicates her character, and it definitely adds another element that was obviously missing from the Scooby Gang. So I will agree that, you know, adding magic into the mix here for Willow's character was a good call. But just like you were saying, I mean, there's a difference between taking drugs with a prescription and saying, okay, you can take two a day and that's it, and being able to control it, versus taking as much as you want and then having to deal with those consequences. And some of those consequences are really, really bad. And I think you're also right in that magic isn't necessarily the problem. That is just the vehicle with which, you know, she's showing these issues she has, because she has kind of an addictive personality and she gets sucked into things very quickly. If we go even way, way, way back when she had her little demon boyfriend over the computer, she got some attention and she immediately kind of just ignored everybody else and was really defensive, and she wanted something that made her special and she wanted to feel special and she ran with it. So this isn't necessarily the first thing we've seen, the first time we've seen her behave like this. And it's definitely a lesson to be learned. And I guess that's my next question, you know, where does Willow go from here? Do you think she's redeemable for what she's done? Do you think that this is the end of the road with her issues, or do you think she's going to be struggling with this for a while?
I want to say that hurting Dawn and seeing Dawn hurt by her was enough to scare her straight, but I don't think it was. Like, I want this to be rock bottom. I want this to be the moment where she turns it around, but I think there's something else. I don't know why. My gut just kind of says maybe this isn't quite the lowest of the low for her yet. I again, don't want it to be, but I think that there may be a lower low, and then we'll finally see Willow turn it around.
What about you, Danielle?
Yeah, I'm with Kristen. I don't think this is the bottom. I think there will be an opportunity to turn it around, but I think there has to be something worse that happens. Honestly, I think there has to be a death at the end of it for there to be a turnaround to actually happen. Because unless something super, super drastic happens, it's really hard for people who are addicted to something to turn it around. And for some reason, the thing that popped in my brain, and I guess this is sort of like a theory, but I think Willow will try to convince herself that she's getting better by doing something that, like, seems like she's getting better. Basically, I think perhaps she might find Jonathan and become like Jonathan's teacher because she never had a teacher. And in trying to help him, like she thinks she's doing something good and sort of rehabbing, but then like gets pulled into really bad stuff and then stuff goes down. Like, I think she's going to do something that she thinks will make her better and it will make her worse.
Okay, that's a good theory. I'm going to say no comment to that, but it's a good theory. I like it. And speaking of addiction, there isn't just one addiction here, because the episode, particularly the conversation that Buffy and Willow have together at the end, you can kind of, or even when Buffy's talking to Xander and Anya, she's comparing herself to Willow, and the fact that she keeps going back to Spike is like the fact that Willow keeps going back to magic. And my, I know you have some thoughts on this about the comparison between Willow's addiction to magic and Buffy's attraction to Spike. Do you think it's a fair comparison?
I don't have any specific reasons, but no. It's just more of a gut reaction.
Okay.
As of now. Because, you know, people will disagree with this, but Spike is a person. Magic is not.
Yeah, and like Buffy is aware of what she's doing more so than I think Willow was.
Yeah, and she also, you know, throwback to season 4, but it's wrong, you know, the body switch episode.
The body switch episode.
When Faith practices being Buffy in the mirror.
Oh, right. Right. Gosh, I forgot about that. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I like the parallels they're drawing here, but I think Willow's addiction is much more overt and bad, whereas Buffy's attraction to Spike is more internal and more something that she's trying to deal with, kind of coming to terms with her feelings and everything. They're apples and oranges, but I do like the parallel that they're kind of drawing, where Buffy and Willow both feel like they keep doing the same thing over and over again, even though they know it's wrong. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But I want to jump into favorite scenes now. And like I said,
I wanted to go back to Rack for a moment, because Amy's been a rat for, you know, 3 years, and she's been back for a hot second. So how does she know about Rack?
That's what Kristen said. Yeah.
I asked the same thing. I was like, wait, was she visiting this guy in high school, or like in the 2 days she's been non-rat, has she like, you know, been introduced to this again? Because if so, wow.
So I have this, you know, headcanon theory that, is this guy where Amy learned magic after her mother got trapped in the statue?
I mean, it definitely could have been, because they clearly knew each other and she knew exactly how to find him. So even if she's been trapped as a rat, I mean, yeah, it must have been
a lot about her in high school.
Right, yeah, definitely.
He doesn't necessarily strike me as a teacher, though.
Yeah, well,
like, I don't know if he'd have the patience to, like, help a newbie, like, figure things out. I don't know. She definitely knew him in high school, though. It's the only real explanation.
I don't think he, you know, helped.
I think whatever he helped with was for his own benefit as well. So maybe he kind of felt an innate power inside of her and decided to show her the right direction to move in, so that in the end it would help him as well. But I also really like this question that you put in here, Mai. If magic sometimes is a euphemism for sex, what the hell is Rack doing to Willow besides getting her high, and what is he getting from it?
Yeah, because the touching, non-touching thing and her reaction is, it's creepy,
to say the least.
Yeah.
He also seems to kind of get off on her fear, which is an interesting aspect of it as well. So maybe emotions and stuff have something to do with it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because fear is one of your strongest emotions. And in a lot of different mediums, like, it's even stronger than love. And so, like, things that feed off of fear are getting a lot of power or a lot of juice that way, because it is just so, like, palpable, sort of.
Yeah. Good questions, though.
I'm picking up on a lot of things I didn't on the first 15 times I watched this.
Yeah. Sometimes going through it slowly and really paying attention to the minor details and talking it out, like, I definitely am interpreting things differently than I did before, and I love that. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, same.
Favorite scenes now. Mine is when Willow finally admits she needs help, and it's when she is lying on the ground, sobbing, apologizing. She's so pathetic. It really is rock bottom for her. And she's just like, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And when she tells Buffy, like, I need help, like, that to me is the strongest I think I've ever seen Willow. Because Willow does not like to admit that she has been defeated. She doesn't like to admit somebody is stronger than her. She doesn't like to admit that she's done something wrong. We've seen it time and time again. But here, like, she knows. Between everything else that's happened, she knows this is bad. And the fact that she's not being defensive, that she's actually reaching out to somebody, to her best friend for help, is huge for her. So I was actually, like, between the tears, really proud of Willow, because I did cry a little bit during this. Mai, what's your favorite scene?
Anytime Dawn was wearing her purple knit sweater, because I had one of those, but mine was orange.
Aww.
And it gives me fashion flashbacks. And also Spike helping Dawn, because their little weirdo family gives me feelings.
Yeah, definitely. I love how much he cares about her.
Yeah, a little niblet.
Danielle?
Mine was when Buffy goes to Spike for help, only to find him naked. Just because.
It was great.
Because he was naked and it was funny. I don't have anything else to say but that.
You don't need to say anything else but that.
I don't think Spike wears underwear at all.
Yeah, come to think of it, I don't think so either.
Well, hello. This is good to know.
Boxers or briefs? No, none.
Commando. Okay. And Kristen, what about you?
Mine was when Buffy goes all mama bear on Willow. Like, you know, Dawn had just slapped her across the face and they'd started to walk out and Willow is in tears. And, you know, you want to feel for her, but you know what she just did. And to see Buffy, like, be kind of cold with her, it was, you know, it's good to know that Buffy is able to separate the, like, but Dawn is her sister and she needs to take care of her. And yeah, she loves Willow, but she knows when, you know, when Willow crosses the line, that she has to let her know she crossed the line. And so it was a really good moment between them. Mm-hmm. Like, despite the fact that, you know, she's basically telling her, you did a terrible thing, stop it. Like, it was a really good scene and a good moment.
Yeah. Between this and their conversation at the end, I was actually reading into this really closely because I wanted to see how Buffy was handling this. And if she, because she can be kind of abrasive sometimes. And I think you're right. She did handle it pretty well between, like, okay, I'm freaking out because my sister almost died and my best friend was the one who almost killed her. And my best friend really needs my help right now. And I think she kind of was leaning a little more toward being angry about Dawn versus really being sympathetic to Willow's problems, but she didn't chew her out as much as she could have. And she told her flat out, like, what you're doing is really bad and it's not okay. And I'm very angry with you. But she didn't make the situation worse by telling her those things. And that was really important to me because people with addiction, like, it's really hard not to get mad at them, but they have an illness. They have a problem that they need help fixing. And you don't want to exasperate that problem by being like, what were you thinking? You're stupid. You're awful. You're horrible, because they're already feeling pretty bad. So I was pretty proud of Buffy in that moment, too. Favorite lines? Mine's just a silly one between Anya and Xander. And Anya goes, don't be ridiculous. Martha Stewart isn't a demon. She's a witch. And Xander's like, please, she... Really? And Anya says, of course, nobody could do that much decoupage without calling on the powers of darkness. It's just really relevant to the times back then, but also hilarious. Like, nobody could do that much decoupage. It was great. And Mai, your favorite line?
When did the building fall down?
Oh,
Buffy, didn't you notice? It didn't fall down. You brought it down.
Yeah.
And it was between the first and the second, I think.
Yeah, they had a couple of rounds. Danielle, what's your favorite line?
My favorite line is from Dawn. And I believe it's when she was out with Willow. And she says, are you kidding? It was like a meat party in my mouth. Okay, now I'm just a kid and even I know that came out wrong.
I love that they throw in these lines every so often to remind us, like, how young Dawn actually is.
It's pretty great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good reminder.
And Kristen, your favorite line?
Mine's an exchange between Buffy and Spike after they've woken up from, you know, their sweaty bringing the building down sex. And Buffy says, last night was the most perverse, degrading experience of my life. And Spike smiles and says, yeah, me too. Like, it's so, like, exactly where they're at right now. Buffy's yeah. like, no, I do not have any feelings for you. Go away, you creepy, scary man. And then he's like, yeah, I know what you really mean. It's fine.
All right, let's jump into Angel episode 310, Dad, now. In this episode, Angel does not lose his soul, but for a minute there, I really did think he'd lost his mind. When demon gangs are after his baby, he goes into full-on protective dad mode, putting his home and friends at risk in order to protect his brand new baby boy. This episode was a good episode. I really like this one. The gang goes back to the hotel after everything's said and done, and Angel does not let anyone hold the baby because he promised that Darla that he wouldn't let anyone touch him. What, first of all, just what do you think of Dad Angel? He's a lot to handle. So I was getting a lot of secondhand embarrassment, I'm not going to lie.
I mean, swoon. Can you be yeah. any more adorable?
He tries really, really hard. And I love how much his son means to him. I mean, not that like anybody's surprised, but it's just really nice to see that as well.
He's such a big dork. I love him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But things are kind of going crazy all around him. And I'm sure that's a lot to handle because all he wants to do is be with his son and figure out, like, how is he going to make this work? Because he's kind of worried about being a bad dad and all this other stuff. But Lorne moves into the hotel, which is great to have him there. He's very useful, actually, especially by the end. And Mai, you have a question here. How long did it take everyone to figure out that Lorne was hearing the bugs from Wolfram and Hart?
Yeah, because it took me until the video.
Oh, yeah. Like,
same.
Yep, they didn't get it either.
They pretty much had to flat out say it. That's why I like this episode. Like, it's really well done. You really think that it's going in one direction, then it takes a sharp left turn. You're like, oh, but this just got so much better.
And I don't even mean on the first time. I mean, like, on the rewatch, I totally forgot. I got fooled again.
Oh, yeah. I always forget. And then it's always a good surprise. But everybody's coming after the baby, and everything's kind of nuts. Holtz isn't doing the demon guy's bidding anymore. He kills all of the lackeys. He wants real soldiers. And he goes after a girl named Justine to kind of become his protege. And she's got sort of a Slayer vibe to her, but she's not a Slayer. Her sister was killed by a vampire, and she kind of goes out and takes care of business every night. And he's going to teach her how to be better. So are you guys worried about what Holtz has up his sleeve, or is he sort of the least interesting part of this episode at this point?
I could take or leave him. I don't find him fascinating. I liked sort of what they were doing with him in the lead up to the baby's birth, I guess. But I just, I don't know. I didn't even remember that he killed the whatever guys, like, until you just said it now. Like, that's how much I paid attention during his parts, apparently.
Yeah, I think I thought at the end of the last episode that, like, him walking away from Angel and letting him, you know, take the baby and be daddy, like, I really thought that that was him kind of saying, like, Darla got what was coming to her, Angel has a soul, I'm stepping back. Like, I really thought that him choosing not to, like, go in for the kill for Angel right there was more of a statement. And then we come in on this episode and he's like, okay, now I've got to kill Angel. Like, I was really confused. I was like, I sort of took that as a, you know, I'm not going to go with my whole plan. I got half my plan. Darla's dead. You know, that's good enough. But then, you know, the other guy's like in his ear and he's, you know, plotting the ultimate suffering. And I'm like, okay, you know, so I don't necessarily really care about Holt and his storyline. I just want him to eventually just go away.
Do you like the Holt's arc, Mai? Or can you take it or leave it?
He's fine, I guess.
Yeah, I like the historical aspect of it, like the backstory and
yeah, he's more jealous and flashbacks.
Yeah, he is, and I like that their lives have sort of intertwined so many times. But at this point, like, yeah, he's just kind of a blip on the radar for this episode.
I mean, I think it's pretty clear that I enjoy Sajan more. They're choking. Do you know the Heimlich?
Szechuan. I think we named him Szechuan. So the bulk of this episode, though, is really about Angel not letting the others even hold his son. And Cordy comes up to him several times, and I applaud her patience because she's really kind of keeping it together. Sometimes she can be very emotional and very brutally honest about how she feels, but she's kind of taking the more subtle route here, which I think is a good thing in this moment because his emotions are kind of all over the place too. But she tries to explain to Angel that he needs to let everybody else help with the baby because no one person can do everything. And especially the fact that Angel can't go outside during the day and his son is human. His son is going to want to do that. And she pretty much brings him out into the courtyard and he's like, what are we doing? And he gets real defensive at this point too, because he kind of sticks his hand in the sun and shows her that he's willing to do whatever it takes to save his son, even if it means dying in the process, which at the time you're like, but you're such an idiot because like, if you die, then what happens to the kid? Like, that's good for now, but it's going to, you know, cause problems later. And then we learned later on that he actually does trust his friends and he did what needed to be done in order to trick Wolfram and Hart, but also to keep his son as safe as possible. And I think throughout this episode, you get so mad at him for everything he's doing. And you're like, you know these people. You know Cordelia so well. You trust her with everything. Why aren't you trusting her with your son? And it turns out that that's exactly what he did. So I think we were all pretty surprised by this. But, like, wasn't that just a great turn of events?
I mean, yeah, they had me. I was pissed. I was like, what are you doing? Like, we just went through all of this. You can't do everything on your own stuff. Like, we've been doing this for a while now. Like, come on. It doesn't change just because it's your kid and not, like, you. But, yeah, it was nice to kind of, before the end of the episode, get this turnaround where, like, yeah, he knew what was going on and, you know, it was all a thing. He trusted them. He depended on them when he needed to. And, yeah, they definitely got me. I fell into the trap.
I mean, they got me because I don't like babies on television or in real life. I don't. It's just, it's not for me. Like, I.
He's so cute, though.
No. It doesn't. I understand that people like them as much as I like puppies or kittens. Like, I get it. They're just, like, not my thing. So I think I was willing to believe that Angel was being so terribly frustrating because I was already terribly frustrated. And I actually like that there was that sort of turn, because that sort of signals to me, like, maybe the baby won't take over as much as, like, I'm dreading it will. But I was completely taken by their trick.
It's a great one. Works every time.
And don't hate me for not liking children.
I mean, I feel ya, so don't worry about it. I'm more afraid of them than don't like them, because, like, I don't know what to do. Somebody hands me their baby and I'm like, do I just hold it? Like, what if really I drop it, though?
See, yeah. Too many siblings, right? Knocked that out of the park. I'm the youngest. I've dealt with the baby thing, especially, I mean, between my little brother and my niece, like, true. I've had enough experience with babies that they don't freak me out. But that's I can funny. Understand why they would be a little freaky and just like,
yeah,
I get it.
Ariana would like to point out that the first person we see hold Angel's baby is Cordelia, his soulmate, she says. So that is pretty great. And while all of this is going down, and while the baby goes to the hospital and gets the shots that it needs and all of that, Angel barges into Wolfram and Hart and threatens them. So, I mean, which was a really great scene. He is somebody to be reckoned with. But do you guys think that they're just going to, like, lay off now? Like, this is it? Okay. Yeah, we'll make sure nothing happens to your son.
I mean, have they ever?
Fair point.
I'm so sick of the lawyer.
I mean, Linwood is pretty much a coward.
Yeah.
But Lila in this episode, she's got some ideas.
She does. She's taken a lot of initiative.
Yeah, keep the kid alive. Open him up. How about no?
Yeah.
And Gavin, well, he's there.
Kind of being useless, but
yeah,
still in the background.
Yeah.
He tries, I guess.
He does try. Lila's kind of beaten him at this point, though.
Which kind of, you know, I kind of like it, but I'm also kind of sick of her.
Yeah. It's been a while.
Yeah.
Fresh meat would be nice. Mm-hmm. By the end of the episode, we do find out the baby's name. It is Connor. And I guess Ariana won the poll because she came closest with Corden.
Yeah.
There was a lot of things coming, going around for the newbies' guess for his name. But it is Connor. What do you guys think of Connor?
I think it's hilarious that nobody guessed Connor when it's, like, one of the most Irish names in the world. Like, as soon as I heard it, I was like, oh, well, that makes sense. And also, like, come on, really? Mm-hmm. But it's a cute name. It's a good name.
We also had Doyle and Darlus.
Darlus, yes, Darlus.
Yeah. Corden is, according to Ariana, it's the male version of Cordelia. So that's why she went for
that's
that.
That's why she chose it. That makes so much sense.
I figured it had something to do with that. Just looking at it, I'm like, that's way too close to Cordelia to be a coincidence. Like, she, yeah.
I just kept seeing, like, James Corden, and I was like, I like James Corden, so, like, that makes sense. But, yeah, okay. That makes a lot more sense, though. And newbies, do you have predictions for little baby Connor? What do you think is going to happen? How do you think they're going to continue this plot?
I mean,
I like where it is now. Like, I like that we have, you know, happy Angel. He trusts everyone. They all feel valued. Everything's happy. But, like, Are we going to have him raising a kid? Like, is that really what's happening next? I can't see it. I just can't see it. While he's still baby Connor, I can see him being around. But at some point, I feel like there's going to be a change made because I can't see Angel raising, like, a toddler and a teenager. Like, just, yeah. So I feel like there's something coming where Connor's going to either, someone's going to, like Wesley, maybe, you know, take him to live outside of the insanity of vampire life and, you know, Angel Investigations life or something. I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah, like put him into the system so that nobody can find him.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I know. Comment.
Counting down the days. I feel like a terrible person. I am happy that Angel is happy. I'm always happy when people who have kids are happy. Like, I'm happy for them.
I mean, he's also not watching happy enough.
What?
True.
Angel, he's not happy enough.
Apparently not.
Yeah.
Apparently not.
Still got that pesky soul.
Yep. All right, let's go into favorite scenes now. Like I said, mine's just when you realize that Angel actually trusts everyone and they all get won over on Wolfram Hart. Just a glorious moment. It was really great. My, I love yours too.
Mine is when Connor is crying and crying and Angel keeps making faces and silly noises and nothing works except when he vamps out.
Right? Like, what is with
babies
that?
Babies are weird. Babies are weird. No, I just thought it was adorable.
Don't you remember in season one in Sense and Sensitivity, he doesn't want to vamp out because I feel you judge me. And Connor doesn't judge his daddy.
Yeah, I was actually thinking that, like, oh my god, Angel has found somebody who not only doesn't care about the vamp face, because of course, like, his friends are used to it now and that, but it actually, like, calms him down. Like, that's what he wants to see. It was a beautiful moment.
So cute.
I mean, the poor kid's been growing in Darla. God knows what kind of, like, turmoil he's experienced by, you know, being... She's not exactly lovely and sunflower and daisies. So, you know, maybe a little bit of that just is comforting. Who knows? But it was really cute.
Maybe he saw some, like, gross womb shadows throughout his incubation
shadow
time.
Baby.
Yeah, like, you know how they say, like... Babies can hear things and sometimes see shadows or something and then recognize things when they come out. Maybe he just saw a lot of terrible things in there. You know, I don't know.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Danielle, I also really like yours.
I don't get it.
Okay, so let me break this down for you right now. So there is an insurance company in the United States called Progressive. And they cover a bunch of things, and like they're sort of like their mascot who's in all of their commercials is this woman named Flo, and she is great. She's got like cool cat eye makeup and like, I don't know, she's like super sassy and super funny, and she's been around for like quite a few years. Like, she's very much ingrained in culture, at least as far as I can see. And so imagine my surprise.
People like cosplay as Flo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the Geico Gecko, but like an actual person. Imagine my surprise when I'm watching Angel and Flo shows up. And not only does she show up, but she's like the most helpful person that has ever been on this show. Like, ever. Flo from Progressive is the woman from the records, the like basement records place that Lila goes down to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she is that woman who's down there, and she is super helpful and like amazing, and she's not even on the screen for that long, but she is my favorite character from this episode. Like, Flo from Progressive, thank you very much for helping. And then also she withdrew information, or like didn't tell Lila information, and made Lila go through a bunch of boxes because Lila just had to ask Flo for help.
Yep.
But she didn't.
It was so great. She's a little sassy. I like her.
Yeah, favorite scene, Flo from Progressive.
Mm-hmm. And I saw your tweets earlier and actually forgot about it when we ended up watching the episode today. And then at one point she says something. It was like halfway through the scene already. One point she says something and like my head snapped up and I was like, oh, right, that's Flo. Like I recognized her voice more than I recognized her face.
Yeah, her face looks slightly different. So I had to actually, I went against my own rules, but I actually Googled like Flo from Progressive Angel. And so, like, I know how many episodes she's in or whatever, so that kind of killed it for me a little bit, but mm-hmm. I had to know.
And Kristen, what was your favorite scene?
I mean, my favorite scene is really when the vamp face, you know, calls yeah. the baby, because it's so great. It's so great. But honestly, like, any time that Angel is trying to dad and the baby is just not having it, like, all the things he tries and like the stuff with the teddy bear, like just so sweet. And, you know, seeing him jump full force into it, like, I'm going to be a dad. Let's do this. Like, it was just really cute.
It's great. Great moment. Favorite lines now. Mine is when Cordelia asks Angel, are you going to circumcise? And the baby starts crying and Gunn just goes, I think he heard you. It was pretty funny. Mai, what about you?
Mine is Lorne. I think it's out in the courtyard. And he just goes, is that bacon I smell? Or did somebody fall asleep with the curtains open?
He always knows how to get right down to it.
Tough crowd.
Oh my god, he's so funny.
Oh, I love him.
I don't think I got that joke until right now.
Okay. It's a great one, though.
Yeah, I'm there.
It's the one when, isn't it when Angel has his hand out in the sun?
I think so, yeah.
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 Yeah. Bacon. Danielle, your favorite line?
Mine is actually an exchange between Leslie and Angel. Wesley points out, not to mention some bastard's blown a gaping hole in the lift. And Angel says, sorry, my bastard.
Love and that one.
Kristen.
And as per usual, I can't pick one line, but it's this exchange between Gunn and Wesley and Cordy a little bit too. And Gunn says, what are you doing? And Wesley says, trying to imagine myself as John Wayne in Rio Bravo. You? Gunn says, Austin Stoker, assault on Precinct 13. And they high-five each other and they have a moment. And then Cordy goes, if we live through this, train in the DVD players and get a life. Just, it's so great. I love them.
I love Gunn and Wesley's friendship and how yeah. it kind of blossomed. It's great.
And I mean, I would, if I was like Ramboing up to defend something, like I would totally be thinking of what movie, like what character am I? Like, who am I right now? Curious. And so just the fact that it went straight to that, like, what are you doing? Imagining myself, like, it just, it's beautiful.
Who would you be?
Ugh.
Oh, no. I would be, there's so many to choose. I would probably be Beatrix Kiddo.
Black Widow.
Nice.
I mean, I don't actually know, but the only person that's coming to my mind right now is Jayla from Star Trek, and she's a badass.
She is.
So,
she can get some stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Mai?
You know, I couldn't think of anyone. And the first thing that popped into my head was Fat Amy.
Oh.
Yeah,
that's she's awesome.
That's not it. That's what you get for talking about things before you start recording.
Yeah. Well, the first thing that actually popped into my head was John McClane. So I would also go with that.
For me, it was Peter Venkman, and I don't know why.
That is awesome, actually.
Yeah.
So, you know. Like, the actual first thing that popped into my head was Peter Venkman. I'm like, why am I picturing him? What is happening?
Trinity? Yeah.
Oh, nice.
An old Western. You were thinking about somebody else.
I was.
Yeah, spaghetti Westerns.
Oh, I was thinking Matrix.
Oh, yeah. that too.
Also, that's where I went.
Yeah.
She's badass, yeah.
All right. As usual, if you'd like to get into contact with us, please email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. Find us on this post on hypable.com or find us at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. We also really love iTunes reviews, and we appreciate when you can rate us. Helps other people find us. And if you rate us 5 stars, then I will give you my best vamp face. There's got to be a filter for that.
I mean, in general, you do pretty good vamp face.
Thank you.
Yeah.
If there isn't one, they need to make one.
Right?
Definitely. Get on that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. We actually do have an iTunes review. Danielle, if you can read this one, it's kind of small in here. Yeah. Do you want to grab that?
Let me get a little closer to my computer. Sorry for any noise. All right. This one is from Bespangled, and it's titled Excellent, 5 stars. I've been knocking around Buffy fandom forever, and I have listened to a few podcasts. This one is exceptional. I enjoy the insights and reaction of the new watchers and their predictions. It's fun to remember what it was like when I first watched the show, the variety of insights and reactions, the rotating hosts and members of the panel, and the podcast quality make this a cut above the rest. There are no commercials. Yes, this that I'm very thankful for. Most of all, I enjoy the thoughtful questions that each participant answers. It's organized extremely well. Thank you, Bespangled.
Oh, that's I really appreciate the shout out to the organization, because like we got this down. We got this down. That's awesome. Thank you so much. We also have a comment from Melissa on Hypable. Mai, would you like to grab this one?
Melissa says, having to wait 3 seasons to hear Mitch's reaction to Amy finally coming back was worth the wait. Hilarious.
Right? Oh my gosh. He was beside himself.
Been waiting so long.
We're like, no comment, no comment, no comment, no comment. Like, yeah, she's just there.
Bless the mute button.
Yes. Yes. And I believe this is another comment from Hypable. I know it's a bit of a big one, but Kristen, will you read this for us?
Yes. Kim Wolf commented and said, oh my God, you guys have me laughing so hard imagining Buffy with a demolition kink. Can you imagine her saying, her telling Riley about it? To answer Ariana's question, the first time I saw this episode, I was totally surprised by Buffy and also completely thrilled. It was only on subsequent watches that I really noticed the unhealthiness of it at this point. That said, I love it anyway. I ship it because it's compelling, not because I think it's ideal. Spike's indecision over biting that girl is in character, in my opinion. My question is there some kind of Pavlovian response involved? He's been conditioned not to do this for so long. Is he physically bracing against the pain? His monster half that misses the power and freedom he used to have is at war with his new life and knowledge that Buffy would probably dust him if she ever found out about it. Even though he showed indecision, that makes me sympathize with him. In the end, he does make the decision to bite her. If the chip hadn't gone off, he would have killed that girl. Kind of makes his insistence that he's changed a little more complex. He has changed, but has he changed enough? Whether or not unsold vampires can love is something there is not really a clear statement on, and fans are divided over. I tend to think all vampires can love, but that love isn't always pure. I think Angelus loved Buffy and Darla, and I think Darla would still have loved Connor. If you define love as always good and always making people better, then I can see you not classifying it as love. I just think loving someone doesn't make you a good person or make it a good relationship. Darla is one of my favorite characters of both shows. I love her so much, and I cried when she sacrificed herself. What a beautiful arc for her. I'm so sad that it's over. Great podcast. Loved it.
Aww.
Thank you.
Some really good points in here, though. And yeah. Again, I think we're always going to come back to, like, can vampires love and what kind of love can they really showcase and that sort of thing. I think it's also interesting the if the chip hadn't gone off, he would have killed that girl. I don't know that I necessarily agree with that. We'll never know. And mm-hmm. It could be that way, but maybe it's just my innocence saying, no, he never would have. He would have stopped.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we're not exactly unbiased.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole, like, vampire, do they have a soul thing is, you know, it's a, in like, vampire, you know, culture, literature stuff, like, mm-hmm. it's a thing that characters are always debating it. They did it on Vampire Diaries. They definitely did it in Twilight. Like, it happens. Here, they've made it clear that they don't have them. But, like, getting into the debate of what does that mean for, like, them as a character, are they capable of this, that isn't even more interesting discussion. So I love that the show made it clear this is what's going on, but does that fact inform them as a character? So yeah, I really love that whole idea.
Mm-hmm. It's always great to talk about. Okay, we're wrapping up now, and we're going to jump into Kristen's contemplations and Danielle's deliberations. We've got Buffy 611 gone and Angel 311 birthday.
Okay. Buffy 611 gone.
You think Willow's gonna flee?
I mean, yeah, that's the only thing I can come up with is, like, she realizes that she has no, like, she doesn't have the strength to fight her addiction, so rather than, like, put people in danger, she tries to run away or something, and
mm-hmm.
they go after her, of course. And yeah, I mean, that's basically all I can think of. And I mean, like, Giles is already gone, so it can't be Giles.
That's so sad.
I know. I don't like it. All right, moving on.
Yeah, I got nothing else.
Yeah, me neither. And Angel 311 birthday. Do they throw Connor a birthday party? Like, hello, you're born. Time for celebration. Like, I could see Cordy and Fred, like, getting all excited about this. And, like, we cleaned up the lobby. The rest of the building may be in a shambles, but we cleaned up the lobby, and we're going to throw him a birthday party. Like, it would be really random, but cute.
Or, like, going the opposite direction into the sinister. Could it be, like, the birth of some new vampire? Like, I don't know. The idea of someone turning a baby into a vampire doesn't really sit well with me. But I feel like birthday here might not be in a positive sense, but more like the birth of something awful that's coming. So maybe not a baby vampire. Please let it not be a baby vampire.
It could be great. It could be adorable, or it could be, you know, terrifying.
The world.
Yep. Basically, this is where we've landed.
Covered our bases.
That's Angel in a nutshell. And Buffy. Yeah. Could be horrible, could be cute.
Yeah.
Basically. Very good guesses, though.
Karen?
Yes?
Before we sign off, did you happen to listen to last episode?
I didn't. I'm a horrible person. I'm so sorry. Mitch, I'm going to listen when my life is a little less crazy. I know what's waiting for me. I'm really excited. So I will have a reaction, hopefully, the next time you guys hear from me.
It's pretty wonderful.
Oh my God. I actually forgot about it a little bit, and then you reminded me, so now I'm really excited.
It's gold.
I should probably do that at some point. But yes, Mitch is wonderful. I can't wait. But yeah. Now I'm blushing. Okay. Yes, very good guesses. And thank you, everyone, once again, for listening to us. We will be back next week. We also might have some fun stuff coming out because of San Diego Comic-Con. Not entirely sure what we're doing yet, but hopefully there'll be some Buffy-related stories at the very least. And I don't know, maybe we can talk to some people or something as well. We'll see what happens. But until next time, I'm Karen.
I'm Mai.
I'm Danielle.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye, everyone.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.